Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
Alzheimer's, it can be a devastating diagnosis for anyone and, of course, their loved ones, the caregivers. This podcast is for you. We have the latest updates in the news, an amazing campaign called Facing Alzheimer's Together. Welcome to my podcast, Olympic and Bundy, Alzheimer's LA. Oh, yeah. I'm so glad you both could be with us. I'll have you first introduce yourselves. Heather, I'll start with you.
Hi, Christine. Thanks so much for having us. I'm Heather Cooper-Ortner. I'm the president and CEO of Alzheimer's Los Angeles, and we're thrilled to be here to talk to your audience today.
You have been there how long?
I've been there for about 2 years, but Alzheimer's Los Angeles has been in the community in LA and the Inland Empire for almost 40 years.
I think I was most familiar with your walk.
Yeah.
And that's coming up in?
It's coming up October 20th. Mm-hmm. We're actually moving it this year. We've been on the west side, but we're actually moving it closer to our original home near downtown. We're going to be at the LA State Historic Park, which is on Spring Street.
Who doesn't love downtown?
It's such a beautiful place. It's got the downtown skyline as the backdrop for this event. It's going to be so much fun. We'll have a whole resource fair for families. It's family friendly. All generations are welcome. It's a very easy walk. So again, all generations appropriate. And it's Sunday, October 20th.
And really, that gets into what you are all about, which is the community, the families, and being there for the families, yes?
That's absolutely right. We say often that Alzheimer's is a disease of the family, not just the individual. It takes the entire family to really help care for a person with the disease, and it's a big job. So we're here to support the whole community around a person with the disease.
I think my biggest role model was my husband's mother, who was there for grandma, who had Alzheimer's, and she was a beautiful caregiver.
Well, that's not surprising to me at all. It's a beautiful story that we hear again and again and again. We hear how these amazingly strong women come in and take care of their families, and sometimes it's a multi-generational family that helps to care for their loved one with the disease. And we women, we're tough, and we do the job that needs to get done.
Well, in case she's listening, Diane Harper, shout out to you. Okay. My second guest is Tara. Tara Hicks, go ahead, introduce yourself. Tell us what you do first. I love it, too.
Sure. So my name is Tara Hicks. As you said, I am a lawyer. I am now the director of legal for the new soccer team in Los Angeles.
Okay, like a super fun job.
It's an amazing job. I have the best time there. I feel at home, and I haven't said that in a while with a job. So I feels great to be there. They've opened me with welcome arms, and it's such a collaborative, fun environment, and it's really nice to be a part of an organization that's so engaging with the community.
Well, Olympic and Bundy is our podcast here at Fox 11. We've done some stories on the new soccer club, LAFC. It is like a party. It's a lot of fun going to that game.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. You'll see the supporter section. You see that they do not sit down. It's a constant.
I heard you can't sit down,
you
right?
You can't sit down. And the stadium is just very conducive to that kind of environment where it's, you see everyone just from different backgrounds, different walks of life, just coming together to be there for their team, for LA.
So you're living this vibrant lifestyle here in Los Angeles, and your mother gets a diagnosis.
That's exactly it. My mother was diagnosed with early onset Alzheimer's 5 years ago.
And she's so young.
She's very young. She was 54 when she was diagnosed. And at that time, I was 28. Mm-hmm. So I was in the middle of my legal career thinking I was on the track somewhere to be partner. That was my priority. That was my number one goal in my head, was that was going to be my next step. And you get this jolting diagnosis and your world just stops.
What were the signs? How did she know that she to go to the doctor to get this diagnosis?
Early on, I saw signs of, she was very not willing to communicate with me often. She was very distant. And then when we would talk and we'd have a conversation, it was always, can you say that again? You're talking too fast. I don't understand what you're saying. You're confusing me. And that was the first sign that I saw. But she actually went to the doctor without me, separate in part from my noticing anything of her diagnosis of her disease. She did go to the doctors for a general checkup. And it was at that time that the doctor said, I think you have Alzheimer's. And this was before she was 54 even. So this was probably 52 at this point.
Okay. So Heather, I'm thinking 50s, yeah. Alzheimer's? Because I tend to maybe be ignorantly associating it with a disease of the elderly.
No, you're not wrong, Christine. It is predominantly associated with people that are 65 and older. However, we are seeing an increase of people that are under 65 in their 50s even, and that's, as Tara's mother has, it's early onset or young onset, we also call it.
So no surprise when you get a call from someone like Tara?
It's always a surprise, and it's always heartbreaking. I mean, we hear stories about families with young children who are still trying to raise their families and are now dealing with a life-altering diagnosis. It's very difficult no matter what age. It tends to be even more heartbreaking and complicated for a younger person who may be still in their earning years and maybe their family is still dependent on them. And it can be, it's just a huge tragedy, and it takes a while. It lasts a long time for this family to have to cope with it.
Well, I love that we're doing this podcast because I think we can be, and you especially, Tara, a voice for so many dealing with the early onset. So Heather, your organization would do what? You get a call from someone like a Tara, and you do what immediately?
So we connect them with resources. The most important thing that we can do to help a family that's dealing with this disease is to help them understand everything that they're going to be facing. So what Tara was talking about with some of the changes that her mother was experiencing are some of the behavioral changes that we see. People just think that you forget things and you lose your memory with Alzheimer's or dementia, and that's not the only thing that it is. It's a degenerative brain disease that can affect everything from your ability to speak and swallow to your ability to track a conversation, changes in your personality. These are all symptoms and complications associated with a disease that people don't know anything about. So our goal is to help educate the family to understand what may be coming their way, help them develop care plans, and give them skills. We have a number of programs that actually help them build skills to manage the disease and manage their own anxiety and stress levels over having to care for somebody with this disease.
So Tara, how did you find the organization?
When I found out the diagnosis and it was real, I didn't know where to go. I didn't know who to turn to, who to talk to, who was going through what I was going through. I felt so alone. And at the time, my family around me, my mother is not married and I'm the only child. So it really was just
It is on
us.
You.
It's on me. And it was always just the two of us. And she is my best friend, you know, and so I'm trying to figure out what I need to do as her daughter and her best friend and her only kind of support. And my family, her parents, my grandparents, just didn't at the time want to acknowledge it. And I think that happens a lot with minority communities, just from what I've been told too, is just that we tend to hold it all in and not let the outside world see what we're going through.
So let me interrupt here, and Heather, since you brought up minority communities, where are we seeing Alzheimer's when it comes to, like Tara, the African-American community or the Latino community? Is it more prevalent with any one ethnicity?
Yeah, it is.
It is, really?
Absolutely. African-Americans are twice as likely to get it as Caucasians. And Latinos are also close to twice as likely, not quite as high. But yeah, we do see it more often. And the other thing that we see in communities of color is we see diagnoses later. And it's once the person with the disease is already well into some of the middle stages or even the advanced stages. And it's a harder thing for the families to learn to manage at that point.
Is it that they're not seeking the diagnosis early?
So it's a really complex thing. So there's a number of things. There's cultural issues on one side of things where our communities, and a lot of communities, as Tara said, we keep things together. We hold them inside, and you don't talk about the family outside the home. So sometimes it's you don't even want to tell the doctor because that doctor's not family. So it really depends from community to community about why they might not seek it. But then we also have a really complicated and some might say dysfunctional healthcare system that creates barriers to helping people get access to the kind of care and diagnosis that they need. So, for example, we would like to see cognitive screenings at your annual wellness checkup for everybody 65 and older, but that's not happening.
That sounds good. It sounds easy enough.
It is, and it isn't, because it takes time, and we know doctors don't have time. And a cognitive screening is one additional step that they have to go through, and it takes a little bit of time to do it right and to do it well, and then there's training the doctors to do it.
Gotcha.
So it's not as simple as it might sound, but a cognitive screening might help us understand who's at risk for the disease or has early stage symptoms. And help us then to connect those types of people to community programs like ours that might help them and their families. But yeah, we see a lot in our different minority communities, and we see it growing. We see this number only increasing in the next several years.
So Tara, your mom went to the doctor, got the diagnosis, then did she call you?
No, so that was when she was 52.
Okay.
Moving back then is when she went to the doctor without me and told me this. And I said, oh, that's not possible.
Right.
And she said, you're probably right. What is she talking about? There's no way.
Because I'm too young.
I'm too young. Exactly. And so we went on for a couple of years thinking, okay, that was just a random diagnosis that had no basis at all. And we didn't address it, even though throughout after that, I continue to see signs. I continue to see that her cognitive abilities were declining, that she wasn't able to communicate with me at the level that she used to be able to. And so at that point, when it became more apparent, we decided to get another diagnosis. And we met with a neurologist, and the neurologist said, from here, we can do one test. They can only do so many tests to diagnose the disease. And so the test they did was a written test that she kind of had to remember how to do time on an analog clock, right, as analog. Mm-hmm. And so do a time on there and how to write the time. And she wasn't able to do it.
So let me jump in here, Heather, with this question. Mm-hmm. Is that how you diagnose Alzheimer's, through tests?
So that's one of the there are a number of different screening tools that are used by different doctors. But yeah, one of the things that they do is they'll ask you, they'll say a series of words to the person that they're screening, and they'll ask the person to repeat, but then they'll have a short conversation, and then they'll say, can you tell me what we just said? What were those four words? So they want to see if they're able to recall. But yeah, putting the hands on a clock, the way we look at an old-fashioned analog clock, was one of the written ways that they evaluate whether or not a person might be having some symptoms or some disease progression. Because it's a very hard thing. It's a hard task to figure out where the hands go and to put them in the right order, which is the minute, which is the hour. And if the numbers aren't on the circle, it's actually significantly more challenging than you might expect for somebody.
Okay, so yeah. I'm guessing, Tara, then your mother got the diagnosis confirmed.
Yes. So there were a series of questions. It was the same that Heather was saying about reciting back the words that were just told to you. I think the date was one, what city we're in. So there were a series of questions, and you, depending on your score, they can generally determine, yes, this seems as if it's some sort of dementia at that point. And that was a tough, very, very tough day. And that's the day that I said, okay, we need to really talk about this now. This needs to be something that we address. And from there, we went and met with a dementia specialist. And that's when we did we had a CAT scan and a PET scan, or a CT scan. Mm-hmm. And that's when the test came back, and you could see on the testing where there was atrophy in her brain mass. Mm-hmm. You can see it.
So, Heather, a few questions. Do we know what causes Alzheimer's in any way?
No. There are a number of theories, but the truth is that there's a big conference happening on the research here in Los Angeles this week. And there are a number of theories. We've been looking at amyloid for a number of years. Amyloid is a protein in the brain. And they've now also been looking at another protein called tau. And it's a shifting target. And I think one of my biggest takeaways is that there are likely to be multiple causes that are happening simultaneously. And right now, no, we don't know what causes it.
Okay, I'm going to just fire a few bullet questions at you here.
Okay.
Okay, so I think of Maria Shriver with her father. She's been such a vocal person.
She's a great leader in the community. Yes, absolutely.
Do we see Alzheimer's more with women or men?
Twice as often with women.
Okay, and what is the average age?
Average is above 65. So the biggest risk factor for getting Alzheimer's or dementia is age. So the older we are, the more at risk you are for getting it, excepting people like Tara's mom that just don't fit into that normal range. But so the older you are, the more likely you're going to get it.
And no cure?
No cure. So Alzheimer's is the fourth leading cause of death in the state of California. It is the only top 10 cause of death in the country that has no treatment, no form of prevention, and no cure.
This may be a dumb question, but I didn't realize it would be considered a cause of death.
It is a cause of death. And it's an interesting point because for a long time, we wouldn't see it counted on death certificates. The person would be said to have died of pneumonia. But the pneumonia is a symptom and a complicating factor because the person often had dementia. Now, we've been working, and across the country, we've been seeing those numbers increase and be counted more appropriately. But yeah, Alzheimer's is the fourth leading cause of death in the state of California.
It is a brain deterioration?
It is a degenerative brain, a degenerative neurological disease.
Which means?
Which means that it slowly attacks your brain, and as it attacks your brain loses its functions. So it can lose. So some of the places that we start to see it is often in memory, right? We start to see it, and so you might see people who forget, like my mother also had the disease, and one of the biggest things for me was when she called me in the middle of the day at work and said, just remind me of the address of the Trader Joe's. And this was a Trader Joe's she'd been going to for 20 years. She was in the car. She knew her way backwards and forwards, and she couldn't remember how to get there. She had gotten turned around and didn't know how to get to the Trader Joe's. So memory, but we also see it in language skills. In some forms of dementia, we might see some physical symptoms. Then we'll also see it in just a number of different ways, including some behavior changes where people become just not who they usually are. Their communication skills, sometimes they might get more agitated, and that's just not who they used to be and who they normally are. And so those kinds of changes in behavior are also things that we look at.
So Tara, talk about the changes you've seen in your mother.
It started with the cognitive impairment. That was the first change, and it's only drastically declined since then.
So does she drive now?
She does not drive.
Okay.
Her license has effectively been suspended, and that was the first tough...
Sure.
Tough just battle for her to have to face because she realized her independence was going to be taken away. And her thing to me was, help me get my license back. Help me study. And I helped her study, you know, and I took her to the office where you could take the exam, but she wasn't able to pass the driver's exam again. She tried. And so I think she knew that things were going to start changing. And from there, we were very thankful that she's still very ambulatory now, and she was at this time, but she was still a little bit more aware of her surroundings, and that's what's been declining, is her lack of awareness as to where she is. So sometimes I get a little worried. I have to make sure that the child lock is on when I'm in the car, because I don't know. You don't know if we're going to be driving down the street and she thinks that it's okay just to take her seatbelt off and open the door.
Okay.
If she's in the front seat, I sometimes try to put her in the back seat because of that. And so just losing judgment of your limitations, I think, has been, it's tough. And I've seen that decline in her. And now her daily routine task that you take for granted, that I take for granted every day, she at sometimes can be prompted to brush her teeth and she'll do it. But there are times where she just doesn't quite understand that this, I'll put the toothpaste on her toothbrush, but now the toothbrush is what goes in my mouth and I have to brush my teeth. She just can't wrap her head around that.
If she sees you doing it, can she mimic that?
I've tried. I've tried a couple times and no. In the beginning, yes. In the beginning, yes. That's exactly how I would get her to do it, is that we do everything together kind of thing. And she did. But now, no. Now it's, she, because the focus is not there either. So it's not as you're looking straight in my eyes right now and you can watch the actions.
Listening to you, yeah.
Listening. Uh-huh. She doesn't know how to do that. She's looking, even if I say, Mom, look at me, look at this picture. A lot of times I'll have to really put a picture in front of her and, you know, and she's still looking around and she'll say, okay, uh-huh, yeah.
Oh, how devastating.
It's been tough. This has been an experience that you just never know you're going to have to go through this. Mm-hmm. You don't. But every day I think, you know, I wake up and say, this is not how I expected my life to go, but I can only imagine what my mom is feeling, what she feels inside. And so I'm just trying to be there for her. I'm trying to do the best I can to make her have a happy life, even though, yeah, her independence is gone. There's no way she can take a walk on her own anymore. She wouldn't know how to get back home. She'll get very confused. And it's not safe for her to go anywhere on her own now. So.
I think of the stories that we cover on the news where somebody's gone missing with dementia or Alzheimer's. So we get those calls a lot.
Yeah, that's a big risk for people with dementia.
Yes. And so originally, this is again how the progression went, is that when she was first diagnosed, sometimes she would just be a wanderer where, okay, she just walked out the house, but she would come back. Or we knew exactly what street she was going to go down. And now it's just that we can't let her leave the house because you just never know where she'll go. I've had to call the police to come get her, help me find her, because I couldn't find her, you know, one day that she actually did walk out. And that's been something that you are challenged with every day. You never know what the next thing is going to be. And I'm just grateful that at least I still have that she recognizes me. She does.
I was going to ask you that question because we think of that with Alzheimer's, that's one of the hardest chapters where the family isn't recognized.
And yes, and I'm not naive. I know that might happen, you know, but at least right now I just take every day that she does recognize me, and it just, I hold that very
you
close
must
to
cherish
me
that
because
so
you
much.
Have to cherish it. And so she, my mother actually lives with my godmother. She is my mother's full-time caretaker. And I go over there every weekend, and walking in that door and my mom sees me and her face just lights up and she's so excited. And it lights my face up to see how excited she is. And she's just almost jumping out of her shoes to come hug me because she's so excited.
You need to record those moments. You have that, yes?
Really, yes.
So you turned to Alzheimer's LA. Heather, when someone like Tara is telling you these stories, I'm sure you hear them over and over again, how do you provide comfort?
So we have a number of different things. Number one is we hooked Tara up with a support group. One of our biggest requests is for support groups. So we have a network of support groups throughout the area. So that's one thing. But we also provide really in-depth care counseling. We have a number of social workers, experts on dementia, who work with us out of our different offices. And we have an office in Mid-Wilshire, downtown, and the San Fernando Valley. And our care counselors work one-on-one with a family to really provide them with the kind of guidance that they need. And they will partner with the family for as long as they want, as much as they want, and be there for every step of the process. So they'll help somebody like Tara understand what the disease course might look like, and they'll help them develop a care plan for their loved one. If the person is still in their early stages, then we have programs that might engage both the person with the disease and their care partner, giving them both an opportunity to be social with people who are going through something similar. It can be very isolating, not only for the person with the disease, but for the family caregiver. It can be hard to sometimes go to a restaurant. Not everybody understands that a person with dementia can't control their behavior sometimes. And it can be difficult for the family to sometimes get a break. And so being amongst people who are going through something similar is a program, and we have several programs that we like to offer people to.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And there's a number of other educational programs. We have a program called the Savvy Caregiver, which is either 3 or 6 week course that helps people develop proven skills to help them manage the disease and and what their loved one might be going to, and also helps them build skills to manage their own anxiety, their own depression and confusion around their loved one's disease. So we have a really, really wide range of programs and services that we can provide to a family.
So you've been around for a while.
Yes, we have.
Are you seeing progress in certain areas? And what kind of hope do you give the community in general when it comes to Alzheimer's?
So there is a lot to be very excited about.
Yeah?
Yeah, okay. There is. It's a long-term hope, but there is. And one of the biggest areas of hope for us is the fact that the U.S. government has been significantly increasing the funding for research. So the U.S. government is the biggest funder of Alzheimer's and dementia research in the world, probably. The next biggest is probably like China.
And I'm trying to think, what did we do before all of this?
So there hasn't been a lot of research historically. It's been actually a very under-researched area. It's been a very underfunded area of research. However, that's not the case anymore. In the last few years, we've seen increases in funding through the NIH to the NIA. That's the National Institute on Aging. And this year's budget, there's, I think, $4 billion. I'm looking at my colleague Kara. I think it's about $2.4 billion that's specifically for Alzheimer's and dementia research. And that's a lot of money. And we're very excited to see that increase. So we think it's going to take that much money and more, and it's going to help really get more researchers into the field. So that's a very good thing. We're also looking and hearing about all kinds of different things that researchers are looking at now. Now that there's more money available, researchers can be a little more innovative. They're looking at different targets. They're looking at different biomarkers, and they're looking at different ways to help manage the disease, interventional treatments that might not change the outcome in the course, but might either delay it or help manage it a little bit better. So, and we also say that it's important to understand that as much as this is a really difficult disease, and there is no mincing words about that, Christine, there just isn't, but there's also a lot of hope. We hear some, not only do we hear some of the heartbreaking stories, but we also hear some of the most hysterical stories, because one of the things that sometimes happens is that people lose their inhibitions and their filters, and they have these moments of great levity, and they build memories with their families. And so although that person might not be there in future years, the family is still building memories of love and of joy with their person. And we think that it's really important to remember. And it's often hard when you're helping your mother brush your teeth. It's often hard when the person you love has become so agitated that they're yelling at you and they can't stop and they don't know why, and you don't know why they're yelling either. But it's also really hard and really important to find those moments of joy and love and to hang on to those, because that's helps us all remember why we love each other.
Well, you are a perfect transition to the Facing Alzheimer's Together campaign, because Tara, you were part of that. I was part of that. My husband was part of that. My co-anchor Alex Michelson was part of that. And I guess I should let you tell everyone what the campaign is, and then I'll tell you my story.
Sure. So Facing Alzheimer's Together is utilizing the amazing photography artwork of Donald Graham.
The world famous
Donald Graham. Yeah. He and his wife are big supporters of us, and his wife Ingrid is actually on our board of directors. They are amazing supporters of the organization. And Don has donated his services to do a series of portraits. And he's been taking these portraits of people whose lives have been impacted by the disease. So as you said, Tara has been photographed. You've been, your husband, Alex has been photographed. So we have a number of people from all different parts of our community, all different ethnicities, and he captures what the face of Alzheimer's looks like. And it's not the old person sitting in a wheelchair. It's the family members. And he captures the challenge and the sadness and the joy on people's faces. And we've been using that as a campaign to help raise awareness about Alzheimer's, that it's not, again, it's not just the one person, it's the family. And we've been highlighting those of you who've been generous enough to let us use your images, and they are spectacularly gorgeous images.
Well, if you ever look up Donald Graham, you'll know that he has photographed the most famous of the famous.
He has.
And it's just truly an honor to be photographed by him. And Tara, your photo right now is it the Business Journal?
Yeah, yes. It's in the Los Angeles Business Journal.
Full-page gorgeousness of you.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, what was your experience like when you were photographed? And I know Donald spent like an hour with me before he even started taking photos, just kind of talking me down, and it took forever to get this one headshot. And I was amazed by the emotion he was able to tap into. How did you feel?
That was exactly it. And I was glad he did that, because those are the faces we want to capture. Because, yes, we have these happy times, and I'm so happy to be here to be able to talk about the happy times that I have with my mom. But believe me, every day we go through another challenge. And as Heather was saying, you see these personality traits that were never her. So she can be combative. Mm. She can be aggressive. She can be upset and mad at me, and she doesn't know why. And so I'm consistently dealing with that. But when I took the pictures, it was actually the day after her birthday. It was a Saturday, so I didn't go see her on her birthday on Friday, but I was going there after the pictures on Saturday. And Donald was asking me, how is it? How do you feel right now with knowing that you're going to see your mom right now, and you don't know what her mood's going to be? You know, what do you have planned for her? And I planned this steak dinner with her, because she loves, Fleming's was her favorite steak restaurant. And so I took her and my Nana for her birthday. But all I was thinking is, when you take someone with the level of disease of Alzheimer's she has out to the public, you never know what's going to happen. And so I have this big hope and dream of her enjoying her birthday dinner, and she might decide that she just wants to get up out of the booth and walk off, mm-hmm. and or go to someone else's table or start talking to someone she doesn't know, or you just never know what's going to happen. And so he was having me walk through the anxiety I was going through that day and kind of thinking through what could happen when we're out? What could happen when we're there?
I'm reminded of a story. I was at a hospital visiting somebody, and a family was there, and there was an elderly woman, and she just looked at me, and her eyes brightened up. She said, "Mija, how are you?" Mm-hmm. I think she thought that I was her daughter. And so I just kind of took joy in how happy she looked looking at me. And so I just kind of talked with her for a minute, and the family just kind of looked at me. But I'm wondering if that might have been one of those moments where you're talking about how your mom might go talk to somebody else. But I saw true joy in her eyes when she saw me, which was so interesting.
I think that, yeah. Sometimes she does think that she knows the person,
yeah.
You know. And you'll have, most of the time, people are very amenable to it, and they're friendly, and they know something's going on. Mm. But you will have some times where it's a little jolting and startling to have someone who you don't know come up to you. So I'm just always aware and trying to prevent that from happening as much as I can.
Yeah. So the campaign has how many people photographed so far?
About 25 or so.
25.
Yeah.
It's just really a neat campaign, because I think that if people were to look at you and see your picture, they're going to say, well, what's going on here?
Right.
And what does she have to say about it? So can you share a little bit about the story that you provided to Alzheimer's LA about the campaign?
Yes, of course. I in my story, it actually took me a while to write. Kara knows that. It was one of those, and I'm a lawyer. I write all the time.
And now you have to get personal.
Now you have to get personal. Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly what it was. And I had to, I would write and it wasn't enough. And so I just remember sitting there and finally, it was in the middle of my workday, I said, no, I need to write. I need to start writing. This is what I want to say. And so what I really wanted to get across in the very, very beginning is that I am the daughter of someone who is diagnosed with Alzheimer's. I found that diagnosis out when I was 28 and she was 54. This was my mother, who is my best friend, who I did everything with, everything from travel. We traveled so much together. We would go bowling. We would go on runs. We'd work out. We even did double dates sometimes. We did everything together. And I try to get the reader to see and acknowledge what that is to be in a doctor's office and hear that this person, your mother, who really is, you know, still has so much life in her, who did so much to get me to where I am, who was my best friend, just hearing the words come out of the doctor's mouth that your mother has Alzheimer's. And your mother's cognitive abilities will never be the same. There's no cure, and there's really not much we can do for you. And that's how you're pushed out of the doctor's office.
Mm. And shocking, right?
And shocking. And it's just, I said, well, what about us coming back? Isn't there something we need to get checked up? But what are we checking? What is the checkup? There is no checkup, you know, and that was very tough. And so understanding that, and in my story, I did want to walk through where my mom is in her stage. And as I mentioned earlier, that she has issues with her daily abilities, not just brushing her teeth, but taking a shower. It's a struggle and a fight daily to get her showered, but we want to get her showered. We're not going to take her out of who she was, mm-hmm. who she was ever. And so I walk through all of that, and I walk through the fact that I didn't acknowledge this disease for so long, and I had to admit that.
Yeah, with your face right there on that big article, yes, yeah. You're acknowledging it
and
publicly.
Exactly. And so there was a time where I thought this, you just don't want to deal with it, right? This is such a heart-wrenching disease and blow that you think, I don't want to acknowledge what's going on. How about I just don't? And mm-hmm. then you just don't acknowledge it. And then you get to the point where it's eating you up inside, and you have to do something. And it was at that time, and working with Alzheimer's LA and then being a part of the support groups, that I met Zena Parrish. She's an amazing care counselor, and she just was there. Any question I had, she answered it, you know, or at least helped me find resources, and then told me, you know, eventually, I don't know if it's the right time for you now, because I was still working through the diagnosis, but eventually I think you'd be a great advocate. Mm-hmm. We need you out there to
advocate. You are a lawyer. I think you can advocate for something.
Exactly. Yeah. And so it was at that point when I chose to be an advocate and to work with Alzheimer's LA, and then went to DC last September. And when we were talking about the increase in funding, I was there lobbying, talking to Congress, and asking them to please do something about this disease. And we were able to leave DC with an increase of $425 million per year.
Congratulations.
For funding, for research. And so it was at that time. And that, again, going back to what my article said, is that I found that, okay, this is my new life. Mm-hmm. And my new life is not what my old life used to be. And this is going to be a lot tougher and more challenging, but I'm going to take this pain and turn it into passion and turn that into purpose. And I was going to do all that I could do to be an advocate against this disease and to find a cure.
So Heather, as people are listening, they're saying, where do I call? How do I find you? Anybody who's can relate to this.
So the best places probably to call are Helpline, which is 844-HELP-ALLS. That's 844-435-7259. Or our website. Our website is alzheimersla.org. And Alzheimer's is a hard word. People forget how to spell it. So it's A-L-Z-H-E-I-M-E-R-S. No apostrophe in the website, just E-R-S-L-A.org.
And if they're not in L.A.?
So they could still call us and they could still connect with us. So we have offices in, we have an office in Riverside. We cover three counties. We're in L.A., Riverside, and San Bernardino counties. But we have sister organizations throughout the state and throughout the country. So you're welcome to call us. And if we don't have the ability to help you right here locally, we can connect you with somebody who can.
Okay, a personal question for you. What is the difference with dementia and Alzheimer's?
That's a really good question. And it's probably one of the most obvious and yet least obvious. So dementia is kind of an umbrella word for a number of different degenerative brain diseases, and Alzheimer's is the most common, the most prevalent form. It's the one that is most that we see most of, which is why we use that word mostly. But it is only one type. There are several types of dementia, and they all have slightly different courses of progression and slightly different symptoms and behaviors.
And so for people who think they might have signs of some dementia, how do we know if it's not just an aging thing or something that has to do with Alzheimer's?
So the first thing we always say is to see the doctor, what okay. Tara and her mom did. And then what Tara and her mom did, which was immediately go into denial, is we see that a lot too. So, but it's a hard thing to process that, especially when you're dealing with a young onset diagnosis. But call the doctor if you're worried about your parent, if you're worried about your spouse, if you're worried about your sibling, call your doctor. And if they don't want to go, call us. We'll help you work through it. One of the things that our care counselors are really great at doing is getting families on board together and helping people that are at different places understand that this really does, you do need to come together to help the person that you love. You all love this person that is struggling. And so it doesn't help to be at odds with each other, and it doesn't help to be in denial. So get a diagnosis, get to the doctor, get a second opinion. If your primary care doctor isn't an expert in this area, ask for a referral to a neurologist, and a neurologist can definitely provide that kind of insight and let you know whether it's this or it's something else or it's just normal aging.
So you mentioned that there can be beautiful chapters. So part of my story when I did the campaign as well was about my grandmother, who my mom said had dementia. And growing up, it was kind of one of those clashing relationships where mom and grandma were kind of always at odds. I thought grandma was the greatest, but her and mom, they had clashing. And my mom said that with the dementia, grandma forgot to be mean to me.
Oh.
Now, I never saw mean grandma, so for me, I didn't quite understand that part of their relationship. But I think there was that kind of forgiveness and healing and loving that came out of that, so my mother could then love my grandmother without any kind of animosity or a clash or a remembering of a mean word said back, you know, 20 years ago.
That's really beautiful.
That's
really beautiful. Yeah. I used to know somebody whose father also had dementia, and she used to say, but he's happy and he's a happy demented person. So who cares if his brother is circling his ceiling in his World War II fighter jet? He's happy to see his brother up there. So, and not everybody has hallucinations. That's something that happens in some forms of dementia, not all, but this person was happy and waving to his brother. So you never know. And I think it's beautiful that your mom and her mother were able to have this kind of coming together, this lovely chapter in their lives together. And that's actually really pretty special. We don't hear that. We often hear what Tara was expressing about people becoming agitated, sometimes combative. But that doesn't always last. People go through phases and changes, and so they do tend to calm down a little bit more as the disease progresses. But it's really lovely that your mother was able to find that moment with her mom.
It was a beautiful closure for that relationship. And, you know, in the end, then my grandma's in upstate New York. We went to go bring her back, and she lived with my mom till she passed. And just to have that peace within the family, instead of not one more little scuffle between you two, please, was kind of really lovely for me as the granddaughter.
That's really special. I do want to say it's not like that for everybody, unfortunately. And if your listeners are finding that that's not their reality, give us a call, because there are things we can do to help them work through it. And there are always alternatives. Like, we can just help people figure out how to manage some of these things. So I'm thrilled that your mom had that. That's really pretty special and remarkable.
Okay. Alzheimer's LA, is there a final thought you want to leave with us or for our listeners?
I would just say, first of all, thank you to you and Olympic and Bundy for having us. And thank you to Tara, who is so incredibly strong and brave in sharing her story and what she's going through. And to your listeners, the biggest piece of advice that I could leave somebody with is, don't be afraid to ask for help. Whether you have the diagnosis or not, you need to ask for help, and you need to be willing to let people help you. You can't do it alone. So reach out, ask for help, and you'll be surprised by how your community comes around you to help you.
Tara, I'd like you to give us a final thought as well, and also give us a beautiful thought of your mom. Tell us something that's really wonderful about your mom.
Okay. So I want to echo what Heather just said, and really that resonates with me personally, because as I said, I was in denial for so long, but once I decided to speak up, you wouldn't believe the amount of support I saw. And that's from family, that's from friends, that's from Alzheimer's LA, Zena, Heather, everyone in that building has come to help. And it's amazing that you understand that you're not alone. It's going to be tough. I'm never going to say it's not a tough disease. It is. But knowing that there are people out there that want to help, it's really amazing. And, you know, I think something beautiful that my mom just, when I think about what I'm doing now, I think this is exactly what she wanted me to do. And my mom has been that person that just was my number one cheerleader and wanted me to really, whatever I wanted to do it full out. And I could always hear her saying that, just do it full out and you're gonna make a mistake. And guess what? I've made mistakes throughout my life. And I want you to be completely fine with being that person. And it's okay. It's okay if you make that mistake. And so it's just nice to think that through and to think about her anytime I'm taking on something new, or even, as I said, becoming an advocate and making this known to the public. And I could just hear my mom cheering me on through that.
I love that.
That's
lucky
beautiful.
To have that.
Yes, I am.
Okay, on that note, thank you so much for coming on to the podcast, Olympic and Bundy. We appreciate
thank
you both.
Thank you.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.